Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Welcome on back to Dana and Parks. We are so glad to have you on board, and we are going to tell you this hour how you can help our friends down south that are still reeling from Hurricane Helene and its aftermath, the flooding. There are still hundreds of people, I believe, unaccounted for. Does not mean the deaths will necessarily spike to that level.
Well,
I think there's still no cell phone service. There's still towns that are underwater. They can't get in to count them.
Consider where a lot of this devastation happened, being in mountain towns. A lot of these people don't have regular contact with society on a daily basis. So why would they all of a sudden go and do that after a hurricane? So these could just be people living their life in the hills that they have not found yet.
A lot of people have been disconnected, of course. The roads are closed, and if they live up the mountain.
Man. Anyway, we're going to tell you how you can help here straight ahead. A couple of stories looking to pass on, not looking necessarily to make them a topic. If you drive a certain number of Jeep Cherokees or Wrangler hybrids, they are being recalled for fire risk.
Literally all of the electric Jeeps.
They are telling you park outside.
Yes.
150,000 Jeep Cherokee and Wrangler hybrids are being recalled for fire. Certain Jeep hybrid plug-in models are being recalled due to several reports of fire starting when the cars are driving or parked.
Yeah.
It covers 154,000 cars in the United States.
I do like how it says certain Jeep hybrid models, and then if you go down to where they're listed, they list all of them. The Jeep hybrid models.
They always do this. Park outside. What if I'm driving? I'm not parked when it sets on fire. I'm driving.
Well, that would be the time for you to put the car in park and walk away from it very quickly while calling 911.
Owners have also been advised to avoid charging their batteries for the time being. So let me get this straight. You have an electric car that you are now being told not to charge.
Yep.
Got it.
That would be what they're telling you to do.
Yeah, got it.
So essentially what's going on
is go to the NHTSA website if you have one of those cars. I don't know what to tell you.
The batteries are overheating and catching fire.
Okay, got it.
Nobody saw that coming.
And then this story. Oh, my gosh. Sam, did you hear this? It's a real-life speed story, like with Sandra Bullock.
We have another bus that was hijacked?
It's worse. I am going to die.
Oh.
Those are the words of a teenager in a runaway vehicle that was saved by a Minnesota trooper. Listen to this story. My God. See if we can find an interview with him, Sam. 18-year-old Sam Dutcher, common spelling, says his Honda Pilot started malfunctioning, hitting speeds of 113 miles an hour before state troopers could disable it almost, wait for it, 40 miles later. How many minutes would that be?
Well, at 113 miles per hour, he went 40 miles. That was give or take 20 minutes.
I was going to say 20 minutes.
A bit over, yeah.
This is out of Clay County, Minnesota. An 18-year-old rural West Fargo teen is alive and sharing his story after a harrowing experience with his runaway speeding car that traveled more than 30 miles at speeds reaching 113 miles an hour. The runaway car sped through uncontrolled busy intersections and small Minnesota towns as nightfall fell September 17th.
Hey, this thing is accelerating. My foot is not on the gas.
If you hit the brakes, nothing happens.
Mine started to go. I'm going to die tonight.
I mean, how scary is this? Just totally feeling out of control. All of this happened in Minnesota. 18-year-old Sam Dutcher says his Honda Pilot just took off back on September 17th. It traveled for more than 30 miles at speeds reaching 113 miles an hour. Again, the way he describes it, nothing he could do. He could not stop this car, so he called 911. Deputies did everything to try to stop his car. Sam says the car just kept going faster and faster. Nothing worked as he tried to stop this vehicle. Deputies even tried putting stop sticks in front of the car, but it didn't work. Eventually, deputies ordered Sam to crash into their squad car.
Oh my gosh. Listen to this. As Sam headed east out of Hardwood on 90th Avenue into Clay County, he called his mom first and then 911. Listen to this.
There's a very easy fix to this problem.
911. What is the address of your emergency? Can you imagine this on Shawnee Mission Parkway? What is the address of your emergency?
I don't know. I'm flying at 113 miles an hour.
Antioch, bro, Mission,
State Line. There's a very easy fix to this problem. Turn the car off.
I don't think it worked, Sam. Listen to this. Clay County Deputy Zach Johnson is the hero of our story. He raced across Clay County, got Sam on the phone as Sam approached busy U.S. Highway 75 north of Moorhead. If you hit the brakes, nothing happens, he asked. Is the accelerator stuck down? No to both of those questions. Sam soon crossed busy Minnesota State Highway 9 going over 90. He was trying everything. Are you able to push the e-brake up and just lock him up? Nothing worked. Somehow, the vehicle's computer had taken over and Sam couldn't shut it off. Get it in neutral. Nothing. What do you have left for gas? The deputy asked. Plan A was stop sticks. We're going to try. But Sam was going too fast. There wasn't time. They had officers positioned everywhere, medical trying to get to him as distraught mom called 911, screaming, crying, help my son. The intersection on Highway 32 is uncontrolled north and south. So at that point, quoting here from the deputy, my plan was to get up there, get the intersection blocked so we didn't have cars coming through when Sam came through at 113 miles an hour. There's video showing Sam.
Oh, he flies.
Flying
past the
through.
Dash cam.
And thank God, no train, no trucks coming north or south. But Sam said at that point, his hope of surviving started to dwindle. My mind started to go, I'm going to die.
I don't know why I believe that this happened, but there were so many ways to stop this.
How, Sam? They tried everything.
Shift the car into neutral.
He tried. He tried.
There's no way he tried and it didn't do it.
The deputy said, I was going 130 trying to get to him. The squad car tops out at 140.
There's also no way that he pushed the e-brake and it didn't engage. These things, that,
Sam,
it's
I'm
not
telling
how
you,
cars work.
This computer went rogue. This is how they saved him. A deputy driving alongside Sam ordered him to crash into the squad car. He said, it's going to be okay, buddy. This is our last hope. Run into the back of my car. The deputy ordered Sam. Then the sound of a horrible but life-saving crash. It was over. At that point, Sam said, I just started freaking out. By the way, the state trooper's car was a Dodge Charger. What was Sam's car? Does it say?
Honda Pilot.
Oh my God.
I don't know why I'm not buying this. I'm not. There were so many ways to fix this.
I think he tried everything. I don't think this was like, I'm just going to flee. I think he honestly was trying everything and he was so panicked he couldn't. All right. We're going to take break a little bit early. And then when we come back, we're going to tell you how you can help all of our friends down south still reeling from the effects of Hurricane Helene. It's starting to slip away from the news cycle a little bit. That breaks my heart. There are still so many missing, so many dead, so many unaccounted for. How can you help? It's always what everybody asks after a natural disaster. And we are going to chat with somebody on the ground down south when Dana and Parks return. Stick with us for that. All right, let's get right to it. They have just announced that the death toll has climbed to 182 in the aftermath of Hurricane Helene. That does make it the deadliest hurricane since Katrina. And a couple of quick updates for you. The Defense Secretary has just approved the deployment of up to 1,000 active duty soldiers to support ongoing efforts there. There are hundreds that remain missing. You can see the power outages from space since Hurricane Helene ripped through.
And following I know the exact path.
It's an incredible satellite image, Sam. Incredible satellite image of that devastation. And I know Florida has gotten a lot of the attention, but this thing spun and has devastated South Carolina, North Carolina, parts of Georgia, all of it. And we are so thrilled that Lee Rogers, news director and morning news anchor for 98.9 The Word, which covers those areas that are impacted, could take a few minutes and join us this afternoon to explain the latest. Lee, we are so sorry. We are all thinking about you up here in Kansas City, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Dana. I appreciate the opportunity. Honestly, in South Carolina, we're thankful that it wasn't as bad as it was up in the North Carolina area, because most of what we're dealing with are just, electricity outages because of all the falling trees. But it's just such a widespread area. It's amazing. It's something we've never seen before as far as the widespread amount of damage that happened. So we have still got nearly 500,000 customers, not just people, but 500,000 customers, electric customers, still without power in South Carolina. But obviously the serious and life-threatening situations are really in the North Carolina, Western North Carolina area. The areas that are bordering along South Carolina's northern border with North Carolina, up in the Asheville area and Buncombe County, and also Hendersonville, Waynesville, McDowell, Polk, those counties in those areas, some of the mountainous areas, that's where all the really serious situations are, because you have all these quaint, beautiful little communities there that are built right along streams and rivers, and they really don't see that amount of rainfall in a short period of time like that. Yes, they do experience some flooding, but it hasn't been like this. And part of the problem that we had is there was a cold front that moved through right prior to Hurricane Helene moving through, which dumped a fairly significant amount of rain, about 2 to 3 inches in the area where I am in the upstate of South Carolina.
So the ground was already saturated.
Exactly. Ground was already saturated. Then here comes another 4, 5, 6, 8 inches, depending on where you are in our area. And I've heard reports anywhere from 2 to 3 feet of rain falling in the mountainous areas of North Carolina. I don't have that for a fact. I don't have a whole lot of details on that, but that's what some of the anecdotal things we're getting from maybe some of the Fox News meteorologists.
Yeah.
And those, but they were just inundated with the rain. And of course it comes down those mountains. It all goes into the streams and creeks there. And then we've had whole communities. There's a little town called Chimney Rock, North Carolina. Beautiful little town. I believe that's where a couple of movies were filmed. And it's just completely wiped off the map. There's nothing there, nothing but debris.
So this was a 500-mile swath of devastation. Can you help our listeners here understand why it is so much more challenging to get to those communities? That's what they're saying. Hundreds are still, if not thousands, well, unaccounted for.
I have driven in these areas, in these beautiful, small little mountain, two-lane roads that wind through the mountains and the valleys. And like I said, the roadways are up against the mountain on one side and right next to the creek on the other. And the times I've driven there with my family, I noticed, wow, that creek's like right up against the roadway. Boy, I wonder what happens when they get a severe thunderstorm or something or other.
Yeah.
So it's not totally surprising that they had this. It's what is surprising is the amount of rainfall in such a short period of time. And then, of course, the winds. We're used to having the remnants of a hurricane come through the upstate of South Carolina. Hurricane Hugo was the worst that we've ever had. That really impacted the Charlotte area in North Carolina very badly, which is in central North Carolina. But the winds are what really caused the damage here in South Carolina, because we had sustained 40 and 50 mile an hour winds. And the trees still here had their foliage still on them. So all of these old, large trees we have around here, the ground saturated. It had been that way for a day or two. The winds come through, and then you have 60, 70 mile an hour gusts. It's over. Lights out, literally.
Lee, let me ask you this, because I'm looking at some of the flooding in Chimney Rock that you just mentioned. My God, houses are just floating away. Was there enough lead time for people to get to higher ground, or did a dam break and then boom?
No, it was no dam. It was just the water itself. Then we did have some dams that were topped, or they did in that area.
Got it.
But there was no any structures that released suddenly the water. This was all rainfall from the hurricane, and then and like I said, in the North Carolina area, it was more the rainfall than it was the winds. They obviously had the wind issue, But it was just the torrential amount of rain that they got in such a short period of time, just coming down those mountains right into those valleys and creeks and just washing everything away.
So was there lead time to get out, though, Lee? For the people in the smaller towns, was there adequate time to get out?
I'm not certain because I don't live in that area. We're about an hour south of that. I would sort of say yes. If you had the opportunity, you probably could have gotten out, and I'm not trying to blame the victims here. I'm sure there were some opportunities. I know there was a lot of talk about that. The state authorities here in South Carolina and North Carolina, I do know from a broadcast standpoint, both on radio and television, were letting people know this is going to be a serious life-threatening event. We are going to have torrential rain. So I know that there was some warning. It's not like you know, in the middle of the night, all of a sudden you got this rain that no one was expecting or had forecast.
Right.
We knew this storm was coming.
So what do you need the most now? What do these communities need? I mean, we've heard the National Guard is heading that way, and that's great.
Right.
But what is the immediate need?
Well, the immediate need, I would say, find a good charity that you believe in, like Samaritan's Purse or the Red Cross.
Yep.
And I would say donate the money, because here's the problem. There are many immediate needs that are being met. I know that there's a group based out of Texas that was doing air flights out of Concord, North Carolina, to the Asheville airport. And delivering supplies. I know there's a group of pilots out of the Greenville Municipal Airport in Greenville, South Carolina, that are flying supplies up there. That's all well and good. That's great. But there's only so much you can do, and that stuff is only going to last for so long. But you have groups like Samaritan's Purse, Red Cross, other organizations. If they have the money, then they can move those funds as needed. That's probably the greatest need. Also, the fact that the National Guard or, you know, the U.S. military or whoever is going to be flying choppers in there, that's the greatest need, because these cities and these towns are
completely
cut off. You cannot get in. Asheville, North Carolina, in Buncombe County, at one point was completely cut off. All of the interstates were flooded or portions washed away. There's I-26, there's I-40. There's sections of there that are still not passable. And I'm talking U.S. interstates that are not passable.
Lee, one of the more heartbreaking things I'm seeing today is the number of deaths of first responders, firefighters, police officers, and sheriff's deputies who are out there working, trying to get people to safety, trying to help, and they got swept away in the floodwaters.
That is certainly one of the issues. I know that here in South Carolina, in Saluda, which is a little south of me, there were two volunteer firefighters that were killed when their fire truck was hit by a falling tree when they were responding to a fire in Saluda, South Carolina. The fire chief and an 18-year-old volunteer firefighter that died serving their community. So it is heartbreaking. We have got, you know, so many people that are trying to do so many things. There's so many individuals and companies and local businesses and just private citizens who have access to either, you know, aviation resources or trucks or whatever, that are doing everything they can to help. I know the federal government has its place and it's doing what it can. People are a little frustrated with the amount of time that's taking, but that's typical of these types of disasters. But once again, this is just so widespread. Some of these areas are so remote and separated by mountainous areas where there's just no way to get to them other than by air.
Lee Rogers, thank you so much for your time. Lee is the news director, morning news anchor for 98.9 WORD. Our thoughts are with all of you. Do not think we are not paying attention. And I know the Odyssey family is going to come together, and we're going to try to raise some money to get you guys some help down there. But please be safe.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Lee, for your time. Be well. If you go to KMBZ.com, and I'm going to post this on all of our social media channels, go to KMBZ.com. Just click on the disaster relief icon. That will take you to a safe website where you can donate directly to the Red Cross. And I think they have 2,000 people on the ground from the Red Cross. But man, when you look at some of those towns, the town that he mentioned, the Chimney Town, Sam, my gosh, it's underwater. And it is under water.
I mean, there were scenic towns along highways that, and I say were, because they're not there anymore.
913-586-7798. Go to KMBZ.com or Odyssey.com. You can click on disaster relief. If you can and would like to help, we would sure appreciate helping our friends down south who are really, months, if not years away from rebuilding what Mother Nature has taken. 913-586-7798. Back with much more straight ahead. You're listening to Dana and Parks.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I have so many questions. But first, we are in the top of the fourth.
Okay.
Love those Royals who happen to be batting right now. Batting. Ooh. Top of the fourth. And apparently I'm not supposed to say the score because that makes people angry.
I don't think you're also supposed to.
The camera just cut away to Salvi chewing some bubble gum. Can I say that?
That you can say. That is not gameplay on the field.
Big bubble gum kind of guy.
Loves bubble gum.
If there was a foul tip, can I just say that? Because that doesn't matter.
No, that would be a direct reference to gameplay on the field.
I'm not saying it was a foul tip right now. I'm just saying generally somewhere in the world there was just a foul tip.
Within the last 12 seconds, that would be play-by-play.
No, it is not.
Yeah, you take that up with management.
I couldn't do play-by-play if you paid me $1 billion. I can tell you were up to bat, and that's about it.
Don't try.
Fine. I have so many questions about this next story from the New York Post. You runners, man. I'm telling you, the running community is beautiful, and it's supportive.
It is a serious culture.
You all got some crazies in your group. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean.
We have people that, like, cheat, that take an Uber to get to the finish line. We have, you know, there's just been some stories over the years. You know,
they're all pretty crazy. As a former runner, I feel safe to say that.
This is from the New York Post.
I'm a recovering runner.
U.S. ultra runner Camille Heron and her husband have lost a sponsorship, and it's a big one. They had Lululemon. U.S. ultra runner Camille Heron and her husband have lost their Lululemon sponsorship after they got busted editing competitors' Wikipedia pages to remove accomplishments. I'm going to need you to help me break this down. What is an ultra runner? Let's start there.
An ultra runner is someone who runs distances much greater than a marathon.
Okay.
50, 75, 100, whatever variation of that distance you'd like to cling to. They run ridiculously long races.
Okay. So Camille, who's 42, along with her husband and coach, Connor Holt, are accused of removing and downplaying accomplishments from competitors' Wikipedia pages while amplifying her accomplishments, according to Canadian Running Magazine.
Now, I'm not really sure what the goal would be here other than complete and utter petty satisfaction.
Let me just give you some examples. And then I want to talk about Wikipedia. Because if you're sourcing your information from Wikipedia, that's a great baseline source. Like, who is this person?
We use it quite often.
We use it. Just pull up the page. Like, if you just want the nuts and bolts, who is this? Okay, she's an ultra runner. But really, your accomplishments within an industry are not going to be determined by a Wikipedia page.
That is correct. And it will not determine whether or not you make it into future races. Your prior qualifying times, if a qualifying time is required,
I don't know that they're going to make it into any
allow you into a future race.
So the couple allegedly removed statements such as, widely regarded as one of the best trail runners ever.
Okay.
From a competitor's page. Widely regarded as one of the best trail runners ever. That was removed. While they added that she was widely regarded as one of the greatest ultra marathon runners of all time.
Okay, so my assumption was correct. This is just the absolute petty of all pettiness that they were just mad that she wasn't widely regarded.
They came up with, I don't know how, can anyone edit Wikipedia? How does this work?
You just scroll down to the bottom and you click edit.
That's why it's funny, like when something funny happens or there's a scandal, you'll immediately see that somebody has changed the Wikipedia page.
Well, and Wikipedia gets updated incredibly quickly. But when I was a kid, I may or may not, I'm not confirming that I did this, but I may or may not have gone on to random Wikipedia pages and added the F word in the middle of sentences.
But there's also, Sam, like a checks and balances where someone else comes across the page and goes, now, wait a minute.
Why is that F-bomb right there?
And that's how they got caught. So listen to this. They apparently have been doing this since 2017. And they were reportedly banned for violating Wikipedia's conflict of interest policies a couple years ago. So they created a new account after Wikipedia warned them, stop making overly self-promotional statements and using words like legendary and prestigious on their Wikipedia page.
Good God, the ego of these people.
Yeah, they got busted once. Wikipedia said, knock it off. And then they went back for round two under a different name.
If your ego is going to grow to that size, do you not also have some self-pride?
Now, she is a decorated athlete with 12 ultramarathon world records.
Right. Let your feet speak for themselves. You don't need to type it into a Wikipedia page.
In April 2022, she became the youngest woman to reach 100,000 lifetime running miles. Why would anyone want to reach 100,000 lifetime running miles?
I said they're crazy.
I would call that dead. I would just be dead.
Yeah, there really is no reason for this whatsoever. And especially when it comes to ultra running, you pay the price to do it. If you can't do it, you just wasted money. The organizers don't care. You're not wasting their time other than the fact that they had to print you a bib.
They just now have a red letter on their face, basically. They didn't just cheat, dumb. But you like...
Well, you know what they don't have now?
Lululemon.
An income.
Yeah, you're right. All right, I love this next story. Today is National Audiophile Day. It is National Walk to School Day.
Nobody does that anymore.
National Custodial Workers Recognition Day.
What did the janitor say when he jumped out of the closet?
Supplies! It's National World No Alcohol Day. Will not be taking part in that. And then my favorite. Today is National Name Your Car Day. All of the coolest cars have names. Remember Kit from Knight Rider? Or, of course, the Batmobile. It says, just don't name it after your dog because that can get confusing in the winter. As in, I need to grab the jumper cables. Charlie's just died on me. What do you name your car and do you name your car?
So I have not had a creative name for my car since my first ever car. My first ever car had hail damage and I called her Haley.
Oh, I love it.
After that, I drove a brown truck that I called the Brown Beast because it was brown and a beast.
Okay.
And now I just call my current truck Bessie.
Why?
Because I like to take it in places it's hard to go. And when it struggles to get up the hill, I say, come on, Bessie.
Come on, Bessie. That's right. Today is National Name Your Car Day. So if your car doesn't have a name, name your car. Mine has a name in the Tesla system.
What do you call your car?
Boom.
See, yours is less creative than mine. Okay, I'm not worried.
See my hat? Am I not wearing my boom hat today?
I don't know.
Does it say
black
boom?
Black lettering on
yeah,
a black
hat. It's boom. I say boom all the time. Boom!
Is that when you punch it and goes 0 to 60 and
1.2? Yeah, or when I'm playing pickleball, I say it. Or when I'm playing golf, I say it. Everybody, I don't know. I just say boom. And then there's this. Finally, today is National Produce Misting Day. Yes, there is actually a holiday for this. The produce mister was invented in 1979 before they came up with a machine that could automatically spray celery and other vegetables in the supermarket. Grocery stores had to drape wet burlap sacks over the vegetables so they wouldn't dry out at night. It is National Produce Misting Day, which proves we will celebrate anything.
Oh, yeah. We have a national day for
in America. 913-586-7798. We're back with much more on Dana and Parks. Straight ahead. Stick with us. We might come back to this in the 5 o'clock hour. Did you see this, Sam? Lee's Summit wants to put Kansas City in its airport name, and it's causing some problems with Kansas City.
Why would they change it?
It's Lee's Summit Municipal Airport.
It's one of a handful in the municipality here. Of Lee's Summit.
Yes.
It has been for decades, has it not?
Yes. The new name they want it, they're looking at is Greater Kansas City Regional Airport. And apparently, the city of Kansas City proper is like, not feeling it. In a statement, a spokesperson for the mayor's office cited, quote, confusion and risk to arriving travelers in the future.
No.
Needless litigation, as seen in other communities, and to protect investments by Kansas Cityans and the FAA for nearly a century. I will remind you, KCI is not even KCI when you book a flight. It's MCI, which That's makes correct. No sense. It is MCI.
If you're flying a plane, and I have a very good friend who is going through the flight school process right now, if you're flying a plane and you end up at the wrong airport, that is not the fault of the airport name. You should stop flying the plane, hand over your pilot's license, and never do it again.
Here's the other deal, with all due respect to the Lee's Summit Municipal Airport. Is that not for, like, tiny little Taylor Swift private... No, I shouldn't say tiny. Her plane's not tiny. But you know what I'm saying. Those are the PJs.
Yes, that is not a massive, functioning regional airport. It is a small municipal airport.
Do you know, do any... Well, we might. We're going to bring this back at 5 o'clock because I'm fascinated. Do any massive airlines land there?
If there is a emergency and for whatever reason they can't glide the extra 20 minutes to KCI, maybe. But I don't believe their runway is long enough to support that kind of traffic.
I'll read this a little bit from the Star, and then we'll bring this back in the 5 o'clock hour because I think it's funny. Lee's Summit is looking to drop the city's name from their own airport and instead make a new moniker featuring the name Kansas City, all in a part of an effort to increase their visibility and, quote, drum up more business. I'm going to stop right there. If you are a small pilot, like small plane pilot,
yeah,
you already know Lee's Summit has an airport.
Correct. Like I said.
You know where the one in Gardner is. There's one in Lee's Summit. There's Wheeler downtown.
Let's say you're a single-engine airplane pilot who is flying out of Kansas City, and you think to yourself, hey, I'm going to go ahead and fly on over to Lee's Summit. You don't accidentally fly into KCI, you go straight to Lee's Summit. I'm confused on the confusion here.
Yeah. The plan.
By the way, the Grain Valley airstrip, according to the text line, is called the East Kansas City Airport.
Well, see, now you're starting to bump up to me. If you did not know about Kansas City, East Kansas City Airport.
But again, you are creating a flight plan as the pilot before you leave the ground.
How about they all just call each other not KCI?
Well, because then KCI would also be not KCI.
No, KCI is KCI.
No, it's MCI.
That's true. The plan has Kansas City Mayor Quentin Lucas speaking out against the name change, causing, quote, turbulence between the metropolitan city
really?
And its suburban. Yes, I'm just reading the news, Sam. And its suburban neighbor. Lee's Summit Municipal Airport is one of several general aviation airports in the Kansas City region.
Yeah, that doesn't fly with me.
It caters to businesses and private aircrafts. What began as a small private airport has blossomed into an airport that serves the region after investment from the city, as well as the state of Missouri and the FAA. The new airport manager is like, hey, we want to change the name. Quentin Lucas is like, nope. We're going to talk about this coming up. Why can't they change the name? KC isn't everything that isn't necessarily KC in all the suburbs.
Until then, go to KMBZ.com. Sign up for Cornhole.
913-586-7798. Yeah, we do. Tell us, Sam, we got some slots left.
Tossing for Tails, we're allowing 100 teams to sign up. It's $50 per team coming up on October 19th at Serve on 91st and Metcalf. All proceeds go to KC Pet Project. Like I said, $50 per team.
$10 to watch.
$10 if you want a spectator pass. You can do that online, or you can just show up on Saturday, October 19th, 10 a.m. It runs till 2 p.m. If you're good and you make it into the actual, because, you know, there's a pre-round qualifier type round robin thing, and then you get in, put into a bracket, you're going to be there after 2 p.m. Just sit tight, lock in, win some cornhole.
Go to KMBZ.com. Please sign up. It's me, Sam. Travis will be there. Mackie will be there. Pretty sure Scott's coming. Dan Weinbaum's coming. Do you know what else is tossed? Not just cornhole bags. Baseballs in the top of the fifth as the pitcher winds up and does what pitchers do.
That is direct play-by-play.
No, it is not. It is not. We are in the bottom of the fifth.
No.
That's all I'm going to say.
That's just not true.
We are in the top of the fifth.
What is true is that Dan has news coming up in 2 minutes.
We'll be back right after this. Stick with us.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real, we're transparent, we're having a hell of a good time with it, and we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.